I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Wario Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WarioDesho or email us at WarioDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show. Gentlemen and NBs, welcome back. Or if this is the first time watching, I don't know why you'd... Well, you know what? I do know why you tune. Welcome to Wario Desho, Stream of Thought. Episode 21 of Banana Fish, Harlem Chicken. Mm-hmm. Harlem Chicken.
Finally able to drink at long last, you know, can get drunk at a gay bar.
Hooray. I mean, or any bar of your choosing. Mm-hmm. If you're American, Banana Fish, you can drink. If you're of other origin, then perhaps you've been drinking for a while. Perhaps you've all been drinking for a while out there. Because this show can hit you hard, right where it hurts in the heart. Mm-hmm. This is, we're your hosts for today's voyage. Harlem Chicken checking in right here. And Dick of the Goblins to my left also.
Oh man, we're bringing that back. I'm Cock of the Werewolves again. That was my name originally.
I honestly can't remember the one I came up with. I wish I could.
Oh, we gotta come up with new ones in that case then. I'm gonna be Agitated Squirrel or something like that. I don't know.
I'll be Chipmunk of the
Apocalypse
recycling bin.
Chipmunks of the Apocalypse. Yes. Now that's a show.
That's
I
a good
watch.
One. Yes.
Alvin, Simon, and Theodore.
Yeah, oh no, no, okay,
Alvin, Simon, and Theodore being in the post-apocalypse. I would watch that.
Yeah, they just were the Alvin and the Chipmunks, right? Yeah,
that would be good. That'd be fucking great. I'd be down for that. Anyway,
so.
Episode 21, The Undefeated.
The Undefeated, right. Oh, shares
the name. I
wouldn't
hear that's referring to.
it shares a name with a smart sports blog that ESPN runs, The Undefeated. I'm going to mute my... Oh, wait, they're already muted. Good. I was afraid my system sounds weren't muted. People would be pinging. Mirror, welcome Mirror and Luther also to chat.
Indeed.
Oh no, Mirror knows what's cut. She's drowning in work and may not be able to chat. That's okay. That's all right. We appreciate you hanging out or checking in.
Indeed. Thank
you. The Undefeated. The Undefeated. Speaking of Undefeated, Unfortunately, Shadon, you are going to have to close down your Tumblr page now. All that adult content that you post on the reg will
under the handle of Cock of the Werewolves, you know.
It doesn't fly anymore of December 17th, so get it while you can, I guess.
Man, I was, you know what, right? Someone, I think it was, let me check my Twitter feed. It was Apanovi who's actually in the chat. Hello, Apanovi. Apanovi actually sent me the link to the official statement. And I'd like to read a choice paragraph here about Tumblr's shutdown that I just found hilarious.
Good.
It goes something like this. Bottom line, there are no shortage of sites on the internet that feature adult content. We will leave it to them, focus our efforts on creating the most welcoming environment possible for our community. So, here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I don't use Tumblr. I don't look at content on Tumblr. I know very, very little about it other than it's in my periphery. But my understanding is that there is quite a substantial NSFW community on. So, if you want to be welcoming towards your community, why are you kicking a bunch of them out? Does that not seem contradictory?
That's the thing, yeah. Yeah, I think that they really mean they want to.
We want the advertisement money, the advertisement gives. We can't have KFC advertising next to two guys or something like that. You know, finger licking good. It's a bit wrong in that context, I'm sorry to say, apparently according to KFC. I don't know. But the thing is, the whole thing smells like a bullshit. And I'm just like, well, you know what? If you fucking sink and you lose your ad revenue or it doesn't pan out for you, Tumblr, well, there you go. I mean, it was pointed out on another Twitter post I saw earlier that Tumblr's quite good for content that isn't necessarily just heterosexual men. So, because, I mean, if you wanted to say, the internet's completely chock full of pornography for that audience, well, that's like saying water is wet, or the people in question who are, you know, looking at that concept anyway. But it's, you know, it's a more, you know, for other groups than that, even just het women, which is great. That's excellent. By the way, there's your first haircut compliment.
Oh. Thank you, Blue Sea. Yes.
There you go.
No longer a disheveled wizard. Now I'm going for a Royal Air Force cadet.
Not only is it just completely self-contradictory, self-defeating, and utterly pointless, and probably in the aid of a goal that they won't stay outright because it would rightly sound bad, it's also bad for people in general who would otherwise use that as a source of content, you know, for their taste that are not, you know, along the normal curve, which is a good thing. So,
right.
Well, the jokes write themselves when you've got a name like Tumblr, so hey, there you go.
You know. In the wake of all this, you and I could get in on the ground floor of a sort of Tumblr clone app that allows shares of adult content.
Shadies, there you go. That's what it's going to be called.
I have a name already thought of.
I think you did. Go on. I know exactly what it is.
All right. Go with me on this. Cumblr. Yeah,
When you say that, right, that is a good joke, I'm not going to lie. But it just makes you think, why doesn't Tumblr simply have an adult content only section? Like, separate, distinct site, maybe?
Who knows? They may. I mean, the sort of good thing about kind of where we are is that these companies are pretty agile, so they may do some of that, but they're going to still lose people that want to do it for free, because a bazillion people do that stuff for free. And like you said, the Tumblr fan community is pretty, like, it's carved out a kind of a unique niche for itself, and it's absolutely a haven for adult type content and very fandom focused content for LGBTQ plus folks. And I mean, maybe they'll find another place, but that shit's hard, man. When you have roots established and a community established in a place, it can be really tough to transition. You know, I mean, I can't even like Like, if I went to a new app than Twitter, I mean, it would just be tough. It will be tough. And Twitter is cool and everything, but I don't... And I've met a lot of people through it, but I can still see, like, you know, it might not be, like, as special to me as certain really tight-knit Tumblr communities. So this is, meh, this is not very fun, but, you know, all right, we have a... This is a perfect time, I should say, to introduce our new stream mate. This Totoro here, wave goodbye to Tumblr. Wave goodbye to Tumblr and the glory halcyon days, which it had, because it's probably going to go quietly into that good night now. Thank you, Totoro. You may get off camera.
To answer your question, Blue Sea, I have. Loving the glasses moment. I have a ton of theories circling in my head as to what's going to happen next. I'm super excited for the return of a particular eye-patched Sync Kisuke ripoff from Guilty Gear. I'm very glad he's going back, although I have a feeling I know. I've suddenly become, you know, enlightened as to who Aya Yuki is, and I apologize if I mispronounced her name. Quite a talented voice actress. I mean, you've got a sword that seduces people, and then next thing you know, you've got her voice. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I wasn't really paying attention. I was just kind of dazzled. He's got a silky voice. I like it. Well, no, it's a cracking episode. I really need to talk at some point with people I like on what I really like about season two and why the fact that it is literally like the next evolution in the craft of that show. Because to me, season one felt like, look at what we can do with puppets. We can fly them around and they're going to be... fight with swords, it's gonna be so cool, it's gonna be the best thing ever. We got Archer and he kills people, I pushed him into the place, it's the best thing ever. Now, I'm being mocking there, but I genuinely thought season one was quite good, although not without its little problems. Namely the fact that it has the anime trope that I despise of screaming attack names to finish fights. I'm like, okay, the fuck does any of this attack names mean? I can literally start straight out, Thunder Melon Monkey Punch Spunk, fuck it, like that.
That's a real move. I performed that move yesterday on my
side. I could literally scream that out, throw that out there, and it would mean about as much as anything else that's said in that show. But they've mostly got rid of them in season two, which is a nice change. Anyway, this is not the Thunderbolt Fantasy stream of thought. That is the alternate universe, which would be just as good as this. But anyway.
Listen, you should do a solo show just about Thunderbolt Fantasy.
I'd do it as a trick show, because here's what I'd do, right? I'd be one of those jerks who, like, makes an audio file that's, like, 2 hours, 32 minutes, and 48 seconds long, but the actual audio in it is literally 30 seconds, being like, the fuck do you want me to say? Go fucking watch, and the rest of it's just white noise. Like a joke video released
like
on April Fool's.
Like fucking H-Bomber Guy Skyrim video.
Yep, there you go.
So that's no, exactly, but you should just do a YouTube show where you talk about it. That'd be rad. I'd be into that.
Mm. I'll get around to it at some point. Anyway, what we should get around to now is talking about banana fish. Firstly, Zippo's.
Yeah. Ah.
Twitter poll.
The polls. The polls from last week. Ahem. Loading them up. They were not ready. Shocker, I know. Unprofessional conduct on this podcast / YouTube show.
Ah, come on, I smell like a sailor.
Scrolling down to the polls. Okay, you have a day left to vote in these polls from episode 20. Is that the ice episode? This is the Unvanquished. Wow. So the Unvanquished and the Undefeated meet. It's the immovable... Or no, the irresistible force and the immovable object sort of thing happening. Here are where the polls stand from The Unvanquished. Does the subtle doctor really like action movies if he hasn't seen Die Hard or John Wick? 62% say no way, man.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be scared of full-size dinosaur skeletons in the dark? 73% say... Dinos are scary, yes. 27%. 27 brave percent say no. And finally, how many times is Golzine going to get shot in the shoulder? the...
More than 50 Cent has, that's for fucking sure. I hope he gets fucking... I hope he gets fucking plug full of lead, that fucking ball.
He is like Hockey 50 Cent, just continues to survive these shootings.
Can you imagine Golsey's cover of, you know... What was it? You'll Find Me in the Club?
Yeah, in the club. Oh, like, one of my least favorite rap songs of the 2000s. There's some 50 I like, but I'm not a fan of In the Club. It's, I thought it was cheesy, even when it came out. But I happen to actually really like 21 Questions. You know this one, right? It has the little guitar line, and it has the immortal rap line. I love you like a fat kid love cake. From hardened rapper.
You know, have you ever had something described like to you where it's so bad it circles back around to being good?
Oh yeah,
that's
oh, yeah.
what that is. Like I thought, my initial reaction was, well, I don't think you know what it was. 50 shot in the brain a couple of times, and it like you know destroys imagination. Like what happened here? Where was he shot? And I was like, no, this is too good. This is genius. It's satire.
It's very good.
If you want my short summary, Emily, on what Thunderbolt Fantasy is, imagine, because you as a British person will probably know this, imagine Thunderbirds if it was instead the Seven Samurai with a touch of fate thrown into it. Really? No, that's literally it. It's puppets as in, you know, Seven Samurai, you know, with magical swords. And the villain, like... They all, like some of the puppets, have fabulous hair and shit.
It's somehow gory.
It's also very gory, especially in the most recent season where, like, this like magical Aoyuki voice, you know, seduction mm-hmm. sword, just chopping them in bits. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, there's a lot of meat carnage. It's fucking ridiculous. But yeah, it is also legitimately good entertainment. It's mm-hmm. well crafted. Not anything deep up. Or meaningful character-wise, or at least not so much so. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly very compellingly written because it's by Jenna Urobuchi, who, as we all know, like you know, I think he's probably one of my current favorite anime writers just because he does a lot of different things and he does them pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like how Season 2, as I say, has improved on what they did before, where now they feel like they've restrained themselves a little bit rather than, you know, screaming attack names. Like, the CG is pretty bad, I must admit, as well. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I really like his stuff that I've seen as well, so that makes me inclined to watch it. There's only one project of his that I didn't like. What was it called? Gargantia on the Vredna? Some V actually. Gargantia for short. And yeah, it just kind of wasn't for me. But you know, I loved Fate Zero, I loved Madoka Magica, Psycho Pass is great. So, yeah, I'm... The pedigree of Urobuchi is definitely alluring in that show. Speaking of pedigree, so there's a thing that we did for previous seasons of Stream of Thought, where we talked about the creatives behind each episode of Darling in the Franxx. And,
yeah, those war criminals right there, yeah.
Well, one of them is back. But, like, I wasn't able to do that in the beginning because, you know, people were slacking and the people that could read Japanese and knew things were not publishing this information on easily available resource like Wikipedia or Anime News Network. So I just sort of stopped looking. But now the Wikipedia has very much been updated, and we have screenwriter and director, as well as original air date, but that's less important, for every episode. So you can go back and look if you're interested. Maybe this is incorrect because, well, but I don't know. I mean, who knows? I know in Franxx, the pen was passed around.
It wasn't even a pen, it was a crayon.
Yes, the blunt crayon was passed around several people. But you know, I know the head writer for this show, for this Banana Fish adaptation, is Hiroshi Seko. And he also appears to be the writer. He's the listed writer for every single episode of Banana Fish. And you may remember Hiroshi Seko from writing four episodes of the Darling in the Franxx screenplay.
Look, right,
11, look. 14, 15, and 22.
I'll be fair to Hiroshi. He's not working under the Tommy Wiseau of anime that is Nishigori, so you know. You're tearing me apart, 02!
You're tearing me apart. Yeah. Oh, God. But
Tsushi, how's your sex life?
Oh, my sweet God.
I can't believe I said that. I'm so sorry.
But
hi, Doki.
Seko-san, you know, has also written the entire script for Kabaneri, the Iron Fortress, which I think is a flawed show, but a very good one, very entertaining one that I enjoy a lot, despite those flaws. He wrote a couple of episodes of Kakegurui, fucking series composition for Mob Psycho 100. So this man can adapt. Just telling you, Mob Psycho is a fucking good series. Underratedly good. Shadon's, you know, most favorite show of all time, Attack on Titan, screenwriter. He's that too for a few episodes here and there. He's a lot of their, like, The Lost Girls novel, Issei's Notebook OAV, Season 2, Season 1. Hiroshi Seko has his pen. Can we say he's got a pen now? All over that. And he's also also the series compositor for upcoming... Hiroshi Seko is getting projects, man. I mean, okay, say what we will. Darling in the Franxx, garbage. It turned out to be bad. But the beginning of 2018, I'm thinking, and probably a lot of other people are thinking, this is a high profile and good project to be associated with. Gets that.
Oh, everyone's chewed change real fucking fast on that one.
But then after that, right away, transitions to Banana Fish. And he's going to transition from Banana Fish immediately to adapt Vinland Saga, which is a fucking excellent manga. Really, really good Viking fantasy story.
You know what? I'll be fair to him. Like, you know, let's not let everyone has their turkeys, and he works on a show that was a bag of wank, to be honest. I was trying to think of something that's polite there, but, you know, it's like my mother always said, you know, if you can't say anything nice, just be fucking upfront with them and tell them straight. So, hey, fair play, Sue. And I'll say this, like, Barrowfish has never been bad. It has been, at worst, rarely middling. That's it. And otherwise, it's been absolutely gripping. It's literally had me by the throat. And even in episodes such as this one, regressively, where it's not as, you know, the heady heights that it has been previously, there are still touches here and there that elevate it beyond the usual fare, where I can point to something that's like, oh, look at this direction. This is really nice. This is good. We're learning things about the characters here. This is good. Admittedly, however, so before we get into discussing this episode, I just want to point out people do.
There's more.
Go on. Go on.
Well, we talked it. So that's Seko's the writer, and he has, you know, according to Wikipedia, written every episode. But the same person has not sat in the episode director's chair throughout the entire thing. And this episode, that chair is occupied by none other than Shinpei Izaki, whose resume is, well, it's mixed. Okay, it's a mixed bag.
I thought you were going to say diabolical then.
No.
I really thought you were leading up to that.
Izaki seems to have worked with Seko on Attack on Titan. They both worked on that, and I think they have one or two other things in common. Blue Exorcist. Seko didn't work on Exorcist. Anyway, gonna stop trying to cross reference these and just say, so we got things here in Izaki's CV, like the Erased television show, did some storyboards.
Ooh, nice. Good.
He mostly good worked show. On the second half of that, storyboarding a couple of episodes in the back half of that. The director of, is that Hanebad? That's a familiar title. For some reason, I don't know. I have no sort of memory of what it is. Also, let's see, storyboard for, man, there's some bad stuff in here. I'm trying to look for a good thing. Sengoku Basara. I love Sengoku Basara. And Izaki did storyboard and episode direction for parts of that show. But also,
you said that like you just suddenly had a bout of indigestion. This doesn't sound like it's going well.
Oh, Space Brothers also is good. But this person directed not one, not two, but five episodes of perhaps the worst anime television show I've ever seen, Guilty Crown. And directed the Lost Christmas OAV. Oh, what a garbage heap Guilty Crown was. I hated it so much. And then, you know, you have things like storyboarding randomly for Ace Attorney, which was a very bad adaptation. And but yeah, I mean, I think,
well, you won't hear me throw an objection out to that.
Woo.
Too easy. It's too easy to do this.
Yeah.
I'm on full pun mode tonight. I'm on full pun mode. It's just going to keep happening, folks. I'm sorry. I'm just throwing it out there. Full pun all the way through. No holes barred.
Okay. We have now discussed the creatives. If anyone is interested in following their work on from here, please continue. Please do that. Like in Seko's case, you know, you may be like, Franks as a whole may be like just grating at you, but that doesn't mean that the creative can't go on to do interesting things. So now,
indeed, unless your name is Nishigori, in which case, as far as I'm concerned, you're dead anyway.
Oof.
Dead to me.
Oof.
Yeah, I was thinking about this before, but to tangentially say, you know what, right? If it comes to realize how much I hate that guy, because he outright said that he intended no message in that show, and I'm like, you are so full of shit. Own it. Own your message. Own your politics. Don't be one of those "I'm not a racist, but" kind of people. You know, fucking own your politics. Don't try and lie when you literally storyboarded a scene so explicitly to point out that if you're not having kids, you're a fucking waste of oxygen. Kiss my ass. Anyway, I wanted to say before something very quickly about this episode. It was pointed out to us at various points, I think Mirror in particular mentioned this, that the last quarter of Banana Fish is going to be compressed in a very Final Fantasy VIII time compression kind of. And a lot's going to happen in a very short amount of time. And the thing is, like, I thought the previous episode was, it stuck out to me like as one of those things where I was like, oh, this is clearly like three or four volumes of the manga compressed into one 22-minute block. This somehow feels worse. And the thing is, I want to hear from people in the chat who have read it. How many volumes or how many pages did this particular episode cover? Because it felt like we had three or four different events that should have taken, in theory, their own episode. Were this, say, the length of, I don't know, JoJo's? Like, if you had the same amount of episodes as Part 4? You could have easily extended this out. Only 1.5? Okay, fair enough. But yeah, it did feel like, you know, the episode was compressed. And there's one particular scene that happens near the end where Ash takes inspiration from Trinity in The Matrix, which just kind of came out of nowhere. And I'm like, okay, when did he get here? Did he turn on Noclip? Did he fucking teleport? The fuck is this shit? But yeah, the Counter-Strike match was not going well for me at that point, so I kind of get that.
Kane, anyway. Kane, pass me the Game Shark. I'm going in. So, here we
fucking
go.
Hacks,
time to jump in. Undefeated. Summary time. Bing. So, first note I have is Sing collapses on the rooftop. Now, of course, at the beginning of the episode, Eiji wakes up. Not Eiji. I do this all the time. Ash wakes up all bandaged up and comes out to see AG on the roof. Sing shows up and he looks, well, pretty beaten up. And then he collapses, right? Mm-hmm. OP, come back. Sing's men have been captured by Yu Lung. And he feels responsible for this. You know, he's let them down. He's, you know, dragged them into this, so to speak, this affair of Ash's that they weren't all necessarily on board with, but they were loyal to him, and he feels bad now that they've been caught. He's pleading with Ash, please, like, you know, can't let this happen. We have to do something. And Ash, like, Ash is now the rock. He's, like, solid. He's, calm down, Sing. I'll help you. Mm-hmm. We're going to do this.
Oh, this is true. Mira points out, don't forget the love charm.
Oh,
AG's like, that's AG's right. Like, oh that fool, she gave me a love charm. Like, you damn bastard. Seriously.
Dumb sister, she gave it to me like so I'd, you know, fall in love, find romance. A lot of good that did. Am I right,
I really
boyfriend?
Feel like the show was taunting us at this point. Like, you know, it was like, oh, you know, we're keeping this mostly platonic, but we're just gonna tease you a little bit. I'm like, oh,
boy. And they, you know, and then later on when they're like, I'm never getting married, be like, no, no, you don't have to marry a woman. You can marry each other.
You know, I'm just imagining, right, imagine the scene where AG gives Ash that love charm and Ash puts it around his neck, mm-hmm. and he gets shot, but this bullet hits the charm and therefore doesn't take him out. You can sort of
Man.
See that.
It's like the scene in the Denzel Washington Man on Fire where he got shot in the Bible. He had like a pocket Bible.
Ryan, oh no, my Bible.
And got, you know, the bullet went like three quarters of the way into the Bible or whatever. And
didn't quite go full New Testament.
No, it didn't. Like most people, it got part of the way through the Bible and couldn't make it to the end.
Did better than me, that's for sure.
Oh, but okay, so okay, cut to Yut Lung in full bastard mode. Hair let down.
You skipped over the scene in which Sing wakes up and speaks Sash.
Who?
Sing wakes up and speaks Sash immediately after credits.
Listen, trying to give a high level overview, okay? We don't have to go over every scene. We'll get to it. What happens? So, yeah, he wakes up and he's like, you know, well, that's right before Ash says, it's cool, man. Like, I got it. I'll help you. Right? Which I did mention him saying, calm down, I'll help you. And Sing being like, oh, great. Yeah, awesome. Right. So Yut Lung, beautiful hair, tousled.
Let his hair down, quite literally.
Just all over the place. Let down. Executing people. Just murdering fools in front of Sing's boys, and is like basically exploiting. What is the name of his lieutenant, his second in command? I can't remember his name. Is Lau something, right?
It is Lau, yeah.
But he's exploiting Lau's connection to Shorter. You know, saying like you didn't agree with Sing helping Ash, da 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 da. Despite, you know, Yut Lung being part of the reason Shorter's dead and all that, still for what I thought Lau put up a really, he was like, look, I hate you even more, you son of a bitch, because you helped kill Shorter, and I was like, well, I think you lost this one, Yut Lung, but Yut Lung actually was somehow able to, I think it showed part of this off screen, like the actual deal that they struck, but they're going to infiltrate, we don't know all of this at the time, but they are going to, you know, integrate themselves back into Ash's group and destroy them from within somehow, betray them, turn on them, classic heel turn will commence. Poor Sing. This is not going to be pretty when this happens. In the limo, Blanca hitting Yulung right where it hurts. I mean, just holding nothing back.
Well, to be fair, it was from Russia with love.
Yes.
That's Luke Young's new favorite film. Lung.
I have question. You hate when, you know, they do this to you. Why do you go do it to them? I want to know.
I am fond of your in Soviet Russia jokes, but you do not need to take them literally. You do not need to turn it around exactly opposite way. Nah.
it's like putting a burning poker right in the in between his ribs. Like,
can I just say something about this scene, by the way?
Yeah.
Because I was just rewatching it just this second on silent. There is an amazingly bad jump cut in this, I must say. Like, this completely caught me off guard. So when Yulung like leans forward and yells like Blanka, it hard cuts to like a shot from the perspective outside the car looking at Yulung's face. And I felt like it'd been slapped. I was like, whoa. Where the hell did that come from?
That's how loud he was yelling.
Felt like a scene was missing. Like, it was so weird for them to transition from that to that and then just immediately move away from the limo scene entirely. If I had to speculate, this is wild fucking crystal ball shit here, I'd imagine that they probably adapt this quite closely from the way it's framed in the manga, but there were probably a couple of different blocks, or whatever you all call them, that fill in the gap between that and what is the jump cut in the show, but they couldn't put them in there because of lack of time. And honestly, it was just really jarring. It's not a big deal, to be quite honest, because it's not, you know, the end of the world and all that. Not like seeing the boom mic inside a live-action show or anything like that. But it just, it's one of those times where I thought, wow, that was just weird.
Not like seeing Mr. Fantastic's hand as a glove on a broom.
Are you referring to the Roger Corman film, by
yes.
any chance? Best Fantastic Four film there is, you know. Yes. That's a funny thing.
Oh my god. It's been too long since I've seen it. I need to revisit that.
Good old Roger Corman. He's a hardworking man.
I mean, the fact that you can only understand about 60% of what Dr. Doom says is incredible. Just the mask muffling him. So good. But Jeff points out that, you know, well, and then so Mira says, look, this conversation in the car didn't even happen in the manga. This is a totally different kind of scene. And well, so the jump cut, gosh, I've got three things I'm trying to talk about at the same time. I didn't mind the jump cut so much because, I mean, to me, it just kind of underscored just how fucking pissed Yutlung was. Like, I mean, he wants to do this dastardly bullshit and not be called. Like, he's like, yes, I know. I fucking know what I'm doing. I'm a hypocrite. Like, I'm gonna just exact the same kind of revenge upon the world that was visited upon me. But I don't care what you, Blanka, have to say about it not being right or like fuck all that. Just shut the fuck up. You're my hired gun, okay? And then so Jeff points out that Blanka also talks about Yutlung's kind of war on Ash, and I think in a reprimand is not the right word, but like, I guess kind of a
retribution,
a gentle
revenge.
Well, Blanka is kind of gently admonishing Yutlung. It seems like, and saying, "Look, you know, what you're doing is part of your revenge, but it seems like you're just playing a game with Ash and his people. And while like Ash actually, you know." You have to respect, like, he's fighting for his life here. It's kind of a different thing. But anyway, yeah. Yutlung did not enjoy what happened. So, suddenly, Ash and Kane and Sing break into this, you know, hideout.
Ruining a perfectly good game of Mahjong while they were at it, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know, come on. Someone was about to pay off their college. But no. It got broken up. See, it was the most, like, unsecure criminal hideout of all time. Ash shoots everyone. Ash you know, parentheses, entirely recovered from the month of malnutrition at this point. I would say back to his fighting best, but he's, as you're going to point out, he's exceeding that. He's leveling up. He's like a fucking Saiyan. You know, he gets close to death from an encounter, comes back even stronger. So he kills everyone with his gun. And Kane and Singh free his boys. What did I write here? What does this say?
200 grams of flour, 4 eggs, cup of sugar, you know, bit of vanilla.
The crew is saved. Colonel Fox gets introduced.
Colonel Fox.
Yeah, there's a decent transition when the folks are leaving the warehouse. It kind of zooms out to indicate, like, this is not just happening in real time for the audience. It's actually a video, closed circuit, being watched by Dino, you know, the reporting snitch Yut Lung here, and the new dastardly villain being brought in to, you know, to get Ash, to bring back Ash alive at any cost, spare no expense. Colonel Fox, ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Fox has arrived. He's in the building. Give him a hand. He's making his entrance on the stage here. 3 episodes to go. Welcome. Welcome to you, Colonel Fox. 3 X's on that Fox, I presume. So the crew is...
It actually depends on whether or not you read his profile on the phone or listen to the subtitles, or read them, rather. Because he has 2 X's on the subtitles, but then he also has a single X on his profile. But then again, as we'll learn, like, I'm beginning to really adore Banana Fish's capacity for trying its hardest to fill out, like, all the phone screens and books with actual text, but then having some really, really great clangers in there, like the arm police that we learn about later. That's real. Like, they literally says the arm police, they now investigate.
Yes.
But Mira, you're not going to hear much of a disagreement from me for one simple reason. As Doc Riley pointed out, it is currently, if I check my, you know, episode counting watch here, it's pretty close to the end, and we're parachuting in yet another, you know, villain to fight Ash. Like, you know, who next? Are we going to have fucking Cobra Commander next?
I hope so.
Like, where does this end? Are we going to get Skeletor right on this?
Please. Please. What if it was? What if it was a fucking, like, just a Final Fantasy IX situation?
Where it really will be.
Just, you thought, you know, you knew who the final boss was. But no, it's me, a giant evil void, come to claim you all. All right. So, yes, the debut of Fox. Well, and the next scene I have in my notes, is actually one of, if not the best scenes in this episode, in terms both of shot composition and of content. It is when Singh asks, you know, asks Ash about Shorter at the end. You know, was he like Hua Lung? And Ash, facing away, of course, from Singh, says, that he killed him before that could happen. And it's a very heavy scene, laden with a lot of unspoken words and thick emotions. And it likes to shot very well. Really good stuff. And then it's Return of the Max. He comes back. He's Max Lobo returns on the show and plays a significant part in the story.
Finally. Max is Max.
Yes. Remax. And they, you know, he and Ash go to a gay club. You know, definitely one of the, you know, I can check that off the old list. One of the things I definitely wanted to happen.
Can I just say, I love the fucking license of this club.
Oh, it's good. It's very good.
It's literally straight out of the retro wave book. I'm all over it. The only thing that was missing was more fucking, like, grid lines, like, and some holograms and shit.
Do you it better or not as much as the club in Cosmic Star Heroine? That was a good club scene. That one took me by surprise, a full-on concert in that game, and I was not expecting them to go to that.
The thing, Mira, I made the joke before, like, I mean, come on, let's start a war and nuclear war. That's what I literally went to do. Man, it just write the jokes write themselves, honestly, they do.
Well, so, you have to answer the question about which club do you prefer.
It's been a long time since I played Cosmic Heroine.
What's another iconic club?
Valhalla. There you go. Job done.
Well, that's more of a bar, but it's a fair comparison. I was going to say, what about the club in the opening scene in Blade? Yeah, that's kind of not a scene you don't want to be part of that scene. It doesn't look as cool. There. It's very dingy.
Club night from John Wick 2. There you go.
Well, you're talking about movies I haven't seen now, so. We've established this.
Still gets me.
Sorry. I like action movies, I promise. I haven't seen John Wick 1 or 2. Yeah, what if I just saw John Wick 2 but didn't see the first one?
Get away with that, to be honest. The plot continuity is thin. You're mostly just there for the fact that it's just great action.
What if I just watched Die Hard 3 without watching any other Die Hard?
That's actually probably one of the worst ones, to be quite honest. Oh,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Fuck. Jesus Christ.
Just watch Blade Trinity. Don't watch the other two Blade movies.
Oh, you would have to pick the worst one.
It's so bad. Despite having Triple H in it, it is the worst one.
Go and watch Terminator Genesis next if you feel like. By the way, I liked the third one of those, though.
I liked Salvation.
Salvation was the fourth. The third was Rising.
Which is the one where they first introduced the lady, Terminator?
That is Terminator Rise of the Machines.
Okay. Is that Terminator 3?
That is Terminator 3.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's the one that I saw. Yeah, I like that one.
Speaking of clubs, I thought I would. The club from Terminator 1, Tech Noir. What a name for a club.
It's a good one.
That's
like Mount Rushmore of club names.
That's fucking brilliant, isn't it?
It's totally good.
But yeah, by the way, if you want my, my hot take, or rather, well, not my hot take, because everyone agrees with it. But if you want my quick take here on Terminator Genesis, it's a bag of dog shit. Don't watch it.
Hmm.
It has a moment where Arnold is about to jump out of a helicopter, and it plays the da-da-da-da-da theme like it's a fucking joke. I'm like...
So you're saying I should pencil this in for a podcast that we do for Mystery Bando Theater?
Doc, do you want the revolver or the double-barreled shotgun?
You
pick your poison here. I'll give you both, even if you want. You know.
Moving on, then. So yes, they go to the gay club, the unnamed gay club, and Max is uncomfortable, and Ash says, "Just chill, dude. It's cool." Like. You're the one who thought of this idea. Put your arm around me. Max gets hit on, gets groped, is not enjoying that very much. And Ash is like, well, guess what? This happens to me. This and worse happens to me all the time. I feel like, so there is, and then Max says, boy, being targeted for sex sure is a drag. I gotta pee. And then,
Yeah, that's a great idea for you to do, Max, rather than just, holding until you get home, given your own... I mean, not that I'm saying, that it's wrong, what... Basically, if he's got a hang-up, now's probably not the time for him to be going in there, let's put it that way.
Oh. Well, so, I remember, it's probably been it's been several months since... And I haven't seen this person in chat in a while, I can't remember their name, and they didn't have an icon either. But they were pointing out that they were making the argument that Banana Fish was like a female empowerment show, and ladies are meant to see themselves through Ash. And this is certainly a scene where I think if you were going to make that case, you could point to this scene.
Mm-hmm.
This is very straightforwardly didactic it feels. I mean, true, of course, like, yes, like, I mean, you'll get no argument from me about the message of this. You know, I mean, women have to go through shit on a daily basis that men just have no idea about and can't even imagine the emotional and mental toll that it takes on you. And I'm glad Max is learning that lesson.
Also, surprisingly inappropriate observation given what will happen later in the same episode. Who will return? Who I was not expecting. But I was so happy.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though I have a horrible feeling that stupid shit's going to happen again.
Please don't.
Think one thought, stop.
Yes. You just got to get the comfort, Totoro. So.
General Foxy turns up at the
Yep. Mm-hmm. Fox shows up and then is like, hey, big boy, can I buy you a drink? I'm here with someone. Oh, that's a shame. Shows up, I guess, just to fuck with Ash later.
Man, let me twist my mustache.
Really, he is just like, I could kill all of them, but who? I mean, where would be the fun in that? I am Frieza, Lord of the... Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm reading the wrong script. I am Colonel Fox, a random person who's supposed to be dead. So, then... why do they go to this person's apartment? They're trying to get pictures.
Okay, so the owner of the bar is called Frank, but his name is apparently Frog.
They know him as like because he looks like a frog.
Yeah, and you know? he was one of the guys who worked with Golzine, and you know, unfortunately, he decided to have his way with several young men, including Ash. And Ash, I think Max was claiming the pictures back, or rather, wanted to get the pictures back.
Right.
So they could, get him taken to justice and, look after the kids after that. It was very glossed over, I must confess.
It happened really quick.
But that's what happens. They essentially go there to go and get the photos back from Mr. Froggy Frog.
Okay.
Or Mr. I'm surprised they didn't call him Mr. Toad, to be honest, but maybe the Wind and the Willows thing would.
That's right. His wild ride. What? That's inappropriate.
Oh no! I didn't even think of that.
So in that scene where they go into Mr. Froggy's apartment, Ash has a gun pulled on him, and you have the. It would be really, really tasteless if someone. Use this scene to fade into a Saliva anime music video. You know the one I mean, right? The one and only Saliva song. Click, click, boom. Because Ash has his click, click, click moment, which I think is pretty badass. I really like that scene. Sorry, it's a really bad fucking nu metal joke that I thought you would appreciate, but...
whoosh.
Man,
I just
that
when you
song
said saliva
for somebody,
when you said saliva, all I could think of was Kakarine from Part 3 doing the row, row, row with the fucking right. Cherry.
Okay.
That's all that came to mind. Like,
right. Understood. Understood.
I'm never doing that again, Tom. It's not happening.
Well, so, yeah, Ash is reliving his trauma there when he's got this person at gunpoint. Not a very safe situation for Mr. Froggy, who cracks under pressure, and because he knows he's about to die, Max has to say, hey, don't kill him. Just, because he's sinisterly, like, sort of the cocking of the gun noises kind of fade into the clicking of a camera. As Ash remembers all the pictures being
taken. That scene was really well animated.
It was, and it was a nightmare. It was a fucking nightmare of a scene. And Frog is lucky he didn't get his fucking head blown off. And they get the pictures, and Frog begs for his life. Ash spares him because he's nice, and then Frog starts to make some kind of phone call, which I guess would like sort of start the process of getting revenge upon Ash for this shame he has caused him here.
But then But then he is disarmed by the arrival of, you know, Colonel Fox. Sorry.
A fox is in the frog house.
Too easy.
And so, yeah. What did you tell that handsome young man? Cutaway. And the next words I have in my notebook are Harlem Chicken. Harlem Chicken.
Oh, man.
Harlem Chicken.
Harlem Chicken is probably a thing you can buy. Like, you could probably get from a street vendor item.
Oh, actually, yeah.
It really was probably...
Yeah, it's like a little food cart. Just
printed
outside.
Hey, give me some of that Harlem Chicken.
Oh. Oh, no.
That was a disgusting accent. I'm so sorry.
Was that like a New York accent?
I don't really know what it was. I think it was just like a melange of pretty much every American accent I've ever absorbed, pop culture.
Good word you
said,
by the way, with melange. Hello, Tilly Bell.
I've read a few books.
Time. I like it. I like the... It's,
Hey, I'm a wannabe author. I've got to know words and language and stoof. That's stoof spelled STOOF.
Oh, okay. I was like thinking that it was an actual. It's like, oh no, it's just it's a. British
I clearly have a glittering literary career ahead of me.
Okay, so it becomes clear in this scene when the death of Harlem Chicken and Killer Bee occur that Colonel Fox is trying to pit the leaders of the Alliance against each other.
Can I just ask you a quick question, actually? Because it's just come to mind. Do you reckon Banana Fish might have been inspiration for Hideo Kojima's naming of the Fox Sound Unit? With all the fucking animals?
I mean... I don't know. Maybe. I haven't, like... So I'm not as into Metal Gear Solid as some people, so I haven't sought out a bunch of Kojima interviews
Lufa?
And such.
Lufa? So... Lufa! Lufa's leaving.
No. Dun, 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 dun. Good night. Good night, Luther. Thanks for stopping.
Good night, Luke. Thanks for coming back.
But like Kojima, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what his influences are, honestly. So he may have talked about it before. He could be right. But anyway, so this is a point where this thing occurs to me, but it hasn't yet occurred to Ash, right? That the leaders are being pitted against each other. Kane's like, oh, hey, Singh, did you rat us out? And Singh's like, no way, man, no way. I'd never do that, man. Come on. What you talking about? It's me, man. It's me. It's Singh. And Ash is just like, shut up. Go sit in the corner, both of you. And gotta figure this shit out.
It's true. That's basically what it is. I'm surprised he put Singh in time out.
Yes. Mm. Oh, come on, man. He started it. Come on. Let me at him. He's like the little chicken hawk in Looney Tunes.
Don't you mean Harlem Chicken Hawk? Too easy.
Oh, I guess that would make also Ash Foghorn Leghorn.
I say, Age.
Sing. I am no chicken. That there is a bona fide chicken. I wish I could do a better Foghorn Leghorn.
No one could do that.
It's not as. I should work on it. I should try. I've listened to Foghorn in a minute.
Your wife's going to be asking you some questions about what you do in front of the mirror every day.
Yes.
Honey, are you practicing Foghorn Leghorn yet? No, why? I say no, I'm not.
Boy. Again, struggling reading my notes, but Ash also ponders at this point with Kane, like, hey, why was it so easy to save Singh's men? Let's think about it. Boy, that's a, I haven't thought of that. That was a really shittily guarded hideout. So they're thinking about it. And while they are thinking about it, I don't know if anything else happens between now and then, but they get attacked, right? Or no, wait, they don't get attacked. Do they get attacked, or do they make the plan right here? My notes skip ahead quite far, but
Ash goes with Kane back to Kane's, like, you know, hideout.
Oh, right, right, because he looks in on the...
And then they've already, all of his men have already been gunned down, but then they get ambushed, and that's when you definitely get one of the, you know, the, okay, we might not be changing the sensibilities, but by fucking God, are we going to get some fingerprint scanning in this show? Like, we're adapting this for the future, baby. Because yeah. Ash is able to fucking, like, pull the finger from one of the dead soldiers who attacked him. He's like, well, this guy's dead, and Kane's like, no shit. No, he's all, like, it's a repeat of the Die Hard 2 joke, funnily enough.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's dead. I'm like, maybe you can get an autopsy report to tell me that.
That's right. And he's, so they send it to his guy, right?
Yeah. This, by called? The way, is where we get...
What's his name? I can't remember. It's been too many episodes, but he ruled.
Joe, I don't know, yeah. Huggy Bear? I don't fucking know. By the way, when we get the profile back on Ash's phone, again, because Banana Fish loves filling in all the details on this, the hair color of this gentleman is apparently black, but it most distinctly is not black. It is brown.
Yeah. Sometimes this happens in anime.
I have a good chuckle at stuff like that, because I really appreciate that. Like, I always appreciate when shows take the time to fill in minor stuff that you won't even notice unless you pause it. It's Easter egg hunting for people like us. And, you know, not doing the fucking, you know, lorem ipsum dolor or whatever bullshit that you always see. I like that. I like they take the time for that. But it just means we get funny stuff like that and the earlier thing of the arm police.
The arm police.
The arm police.
Right. So after they get the info from, yes, about the arm police from their guy... Ash's weapons dealer, who, again, I wish I could remember his name, because again,
that was his name. That rules. Was who it was. Yeah.
So, like, that we discover that Colonel Fox and his buddies are French mercenaries. So we get another ethnicity added to the melting pot here. Of you know, American, Japanese, we got Chinese, we got the Russian, and you know, now we have. Do we get Fox's first name? Is it just like Jacques Fox, Pierre Fox?
Actually, he's not French. He's from Belgium. I remember Claude? That from his profile.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he's just employed by the French. So, yeah. So he wouldn't have, like, you know, like, Le Ash, you know, so he would not have a bad a bad French accent. Come here, no. Mon ami. Allow me to teach you of the love and the passion. Leave this edgy behind and come with a real man who knows everything there is to know about the passions.
Considering that General Fox looks like a less emaciated psych master, I don't want to imagine him speaking in French.
He does look like the psych master. Holy shit. He really does. He's like the older, healthier brother.
I mean, just to be fair, Scythe Master's first name was Giuseppe, so it all kind of fits together.
It's European master family.
It's okay, Goldstein. I've got a plan. I have a 16-year-old girl wearing a Phantom of the Opera mask. She will kill the fuck out of this kid.
Yep. Bring in Ayn. Ayn versus Ash.
Ayn just runs up to him and he just goes bang, because he's so much better than she is. It's not even fucking funny.
That's right.
In case you missed our podcast on Phantom, that's also a bag of shit. Don't watch it.
Oh, Phantom. Phantom's real bad. Source material might not be as bad. There are interesting elements in Phantom, but
they're Rochi fame again, funnily enough. There's your link back to what we said earlier.
So what else happens in this episode?
We get a Counter-Strike game.
Jessica's back. Hooray. Oh, Counter-Strike?
There you go. It's not exactly D-Dust or anything like that, but it'll do. It's an okay map.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He brings the true mercs for the final showdown.
But you are entirely correct. Jessica does return. I'm like, yes!
Yeah.
Yes!
I'm so happy she's back.
She seemed way too cool to be a one-shot character. I'm so glad that she's back.
Yeah, well, it's because the threat level is quite high. You know, Ash has gotten them into some trouble, some shit. And so the families of those involved must be guarded. We get a very nice scene, right, of Ash and Aji sharing a warm cup of mineral water. You know, the thing that brings true lovers together. The warm cup of mineral water. And, you know, Ash is stressing out, trying to kind of plan the scenario for the upcoming battle. But Aji, again, tells him something that I think is fairly obvious. And that, you know, it clicks in Ash's brain, and he forms a battle plan that he thinks is much better. He's going to draw them into the building. I thought they were going to try to blow the building up, but I guess they don't have explosives. So, yeah, Jessica now knows about everything. Max manages to tell her what all is going on, and
they have a blazing row, which results in AG and Ash looking on like, not this shit again.
Yes, exactly. Oh, brother. I'm never going to get married, they say, again. Doesn't have to be. You can marry each other.
You take that back.
Yeah, please. And Sing, you know, when he leaves, has a very cute sort of like, he's almost looks very happy. Looks much happier than anyone else in this situation. Mm-hmm. Just like, don't you die, Ash. I'm counting on you to be back. You know, and Ash just, like, you know, gives him the old, I don't know, fucking Top Gun reply or whatever. Like, yeah, we'll fly these skies again, chum. Buddy old boy. And Sing goes away with the traitors in waiting. And also Jessica, for some reason. And Aji. And then the firefight commences. Ash does a lot of cool stuff.
He teleports to the roof and then decides to pull a Trinity from the Matrix by jumping through the window for reasons.
Somehow doesn't get shot. At Kane as well. Somehow avoids all gunfire. There's a lot of it. They're drastically outgunned. The quality of the weapon of the opposition is, you know, what is it? The DPS check is not on their side. The DPS of is very high.
All the Fox's people pre-ordered the game and therefore have access to
the weapons. They got the bonus weapons!
Yeah, they pre-ordered. What a bunch of fucking pay-to-win cheaters.
Oh, jerks. Why would you do that? Why would you pre-order a thing that we can all download? There will be no demand issues or supply side issues.
I keep getting prompts to pre-order the fucking Robin Hood film that came out recently. I'm like, you could not, like, if it said minus on the money and you gave me money to pre-order it, I'd be okay with that.
No.
But other than that, piss the fuck off YouTube. I'm not watching that fucking turd anytime soon.
I didn't even know that existed, to be honest with you.
Keep it that way. It's bad. I mean,
who's in it?
Actors.
Okay, never
apparently.
Mind. Actor, yes.
Actors. people who have professional acting credits, apparently.
Whoever happened to be at the Sci-Fi Original Studio lot that day. They were
in Jamie Foxx is in it, cashing his fucking paycheck. He's done Django Unchained. He's done some great films in his time. He doesn't need to work for any art anymore.
No, exactly. He's done his art movies. He made Ray. He made Django.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he made... wasn't an art film, but... He made a very successful action movie with Tom Cruise.
Sudden Fall, live action banana fish, General Fox played by Christoph Waltz.
There you go. Good casting right there. This is, yeah, I'm into this. Who the hell would play Ash, though, in AG? That's a tough one.
I don't know. Is the honest answer. It'll probably hit me like it. I'll wake up in a cold fucking sweat at 4 o'clock this morning. Like, I know it! Finally figured out who could play him, and then I'll have no one stop him.
Eiji played by young Japanese wrestler Ayato Yoshida. That's who's quite the looker. He could pass for Eiji for sure. And he could pass for a former athlete. You know, being a wrestler, he's He's in good shape, got a nice physique. He could, you know, you could believe he's a pole vaulter. Ayato Yoshida, formerly of Kaientai Dojo, now of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Bones gets shot.
Oh no!
The pinky. Your astounding lack of care for Bones tickles me. But yeah, like, Bones got like, shot.
Well, he's a bare bones character, so there you go. Sorry, that was pretty.
Well, Max also gets captured, taken as a hostage. Jessica turns around mid-plan.
I still love that idiot, I swear. I'm gonna go find him.
Darling, I'm coming back to you. Listen, like, I don't want to, you know, crap on her. She's great. She just knows what she wants and she goes for it. She's like, look, it's a bad plan. I'm not dealing with this. Going back for my husband. End of.
It's this show, so that means obviously one of the two of them is going to die, because we can't have a healthy, healed up, you know, regular relationship. That's not me being mean-spirited or anything. I'm just taking the piss, because I just, you know full well.
No, she's like, totally going to save them. Like, she's going to make sure, like, if she didn't do this, the plan of Lao and his buddies to betray Sing would happen. But now their plan has been thrown off to a significant degree, because Sing, mm-hmm. Sing follows her. He's like, yeah, let's go back. Come on.
Go team.
You know, it's like, I am charged with protecting this lady. Let's do it. And, you know, he goes back with her and allows people are like, fuck, what are you fucking doing? Do it. Like, right before this, they're like, all right, Lao, come on, let's fucking go. Let's do this shit. Ashes and Hero, let's do it. And he's just like, shut the fuck up. Come on, keep that shit down. It's not the right time.
Honestly, the volume on what they were saying was loud enough that they could have literally heard it. I'm so stunned. They usually I know. Like, guys, I can totally hear you.
Yeah, sing.
Are you talking about betraying us? No. I swear, no.
What are you guys whispering about back there? Tell me. I'm Sing Sully.
When the fuck did Sing turn into Martin Prince from The Simpsons? What the fuck, Doc?
He's just so happy all the time now, bounding around. Like, so he was appropriately sort of, you know, down when they're talking about Shorter. But, I mean, that last shot of him is all him, like, whoosh.
I'm a good smiling, person. You know?
Just like, yeah.
I'm a serial killer, and I'm not even told to ride the teacups at Disneyland.
He's a sweet lad, Sing Su Ling. He's a sweet lad. Good boy. Good boy. Salvageable.
Anyway.
Get him back in school, all right? Get him on the path to success. Get him out of the, you know, he can't associate with those other boys like Lao. He needs to be studying. He needs to be his sister. Shorter sister needs to take him in. Watch over him. Get him through. Done deal. All right? We can save this boy. Save him. That's pretty much it, right? Like, Max gets taken hostage and Fox. You know, it's like, hey, yo, you know the game. I got someone that you care about at gunpoint. So get out here. And he does. End of episode. The Undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Whew. So Ash has surrendered and is now probably going to end up going back to fucking Golzin again. He, like...
No, that can't happen. There's going to be another gunfight. It cannot... It absolutely can't go back. It just...
I hope not, because if he was any more of a boomerang, he'd be fucking Australian.
Exactly, yes, that's what I said. Ash the yo-yo. Just, boy.
Ooh, right.
Talking points time.
I don't really have a lot to say about this episode, but I'll just do one... I'll do one brief talking point, which is about direction, because we did bring up the fact that there are, you know, directors on each episode. Mm-hmm. And there were two scenes in this episode that I really liked, even though they were kind of simple, but they still worked. The first one is between Sing and Ash, when Ash tells Sing, you know, that he killed Shorts before he went completely, where his brain basically turns completely to mushroom banana fish. The way this is framed is that Ash is walking down a flight of stairs and Sing is at the top of this flight. So Sing, very short man by normal, is standing over this man who has otherwise been above him in every respect, apart from actual criminal rank, I suppose, because Ash is technically not a leader of a gang anymore, or at least not a leader of a large criminal gang. Anyway, but you get my point. Mm-hmm. So it's a power play. It's a staging thing to show that Sing has finally, you know, grown up and matured to stand up and ask the actual question he wants to know, get the answer he wants, and Ash, you know, does indeed tell him. And the other one, which I'm really fond of, so we have the moment in which Ash, you know, has got the photos from Froggy, who finally does fucking croak. Yeah. Thank God for that.
Yeah. With their fucking lizard tattoo in the letter K. Whatever the fuck that's supposed to mean. Clizzard. I don't know. I don't know. What does that mean? What does it mean? Clizzard. Or no, maybe it's just a gecko. And it's like Gecock. That's Gecock. That's it's a.
Is he doing product placement for Geico? What is that? I don't fucking know. Anyway,
that's incredible.
Anyway, so this scene, right? The opening shot of it is of
and he just emerges from the hand. He's like, "Boy, this is a tricky situation. I guess this is not the right time to tell you could save 15% on car insurance by switching to Geico." Emerge goes like sinks back into the hand.
No, I'm just saying for the fucking pictures, you fucking atrophy bastard. Anyway, so this
would be a
right,
very bad product placement.
It would be, yeah. He looks right at the camera when he says it.
Yes.
But anyway, this scene. Oh. So Ash is there with.
Thank you for bringing that up, Mirror. We'll talk about that in a second. Go ahead.
We absolutely. So this scene, Ash is there with Max, and is it? What was the name of his colleague again? The editor guy. I can't remember.
I don't recall. Did they say they did say
Mr. Journalism. There we go. Yeah. He's there with Mr. Journalism. Yeah. There we are. Okay, fine, whatever. Now,
J. Jonah.
Max and Mr. Journalism are looking over the photographs they've got on a laptop, which caught me a bit by surprise. I thought they were Polaroids, but they're viewing them on... But who gives a fuck about that? And Ash, on the other hand, is actually leaning against a pillar because they're on an underpass. Mm-hmm. On the opposite side, so he's not only looking away from the laptop, but he's actually got a physical barrier between him and the laptop where the pictures are, which of course are pictures of him and other boys being raped by Froggy and various other, you know, horrible evil people who I hope are dead, or if not, will be dead soon. I really like this, because first off, as hard as Ash appears, to use an English term here, like, you know, solid as he seems on the outside, like, you know, that he's nothing can get past his armor. That's not true. He does allow himself moments of vulnerability where he shows that he, you know, I mean, I think it was suggested in the previous stream that, you know, one of the ways to see this is Ash as a trauma victim and a survivor. Right. And this is certainly it, because he doesn't want to look at these pictures. And as we'll allude to in the scene in a bit when we talk about what happens with Max burning them, that will be important as well. But I really like the use of this pillar here, because he actually had to be comfortable with knowing that they're in close by and that people are looking them. He only has to be looking away. He has to have something physically in between him and the pictures in question. But something tangible that blocks his line of sight and makes it feel like they're in a separate world. And this is not anything that's commented on by anyone. No one points out to him. No one explicitly says to him, "Oh yeah, you know, you're hiding behind there." It's all entirely subtext. It's all subtle. And I really appreciate it. It's a very small thing. It probably was in the manga as framed. But the thing is, even if it was, I'm still glad it survived its adaptation. If it wasn't, I'm glad they made the change to do it. Because it's not just about what the characters are saying, but it's also what the actual film language is communicating to you. The framing, the placement of characters, the staging, the lighting, where they're looking, what they're doing. So... small things, but this again just goes to show that even just little bits like that can really help texture a character's, you know, reactions to something and then turn our understanding as an audience of that character's emotional state.
No, that was great. That's
all I've got, by the way. I'm completely out of things of wise to say other than... Oh, actually, no, I have one other thing. Well, I'll save that, but it's only going to be very brief.
Okay.
Because we've already can. Okay. Over to you!
Okay. Where's my mouse? Where did it go? All right.
Next point.
Sounder's important. So
Harlan, mouse has gone missing.
Exactly. Totoro, find it. Get on that.
Harlan Totoro gets on it.
Harlan mouse. Well, my first... Let's deal with the small fry. This is a very minor complaint. It doesn't even have anything to do with the show at all. Just something I noticed about the delivery mechanism here. One, Amazon. When I am, looking for the show and I find it and I click upon it and I am taken to the landing page of said show, you get the title Banana Fish, you get a little description, other kinds of data, and you get who's starring in the show. Oh, good. I can find out who all the voice actors... Oh, wait a minute. No, I can't. Because it has the friggin' fictional character names. Banana
starring
Fish.
Ash
starring Ash Lynx. AG.
This is literally... You know what the funny thing is? I mentioned Metal Gear Solid before. This is the same shit that happened in The Phantom Pain, where you every mission you played... opened up with a title credits, like, you know, of starring Punished Venom Snake and Revolver Shallus Shashka Oslot. I'm like, really? Kojima, I know you love TV. I fucking know you love TV. I know that you love Breaking Bad. I know
Breaking
that you
Bad,
would literally...
Yeah.
I know full well that you would grind up a DVD box set of Breaking Bad into a fine powder and snort up a chew from, you know, a fucking straw from McDonald's.
Right.
I know you'd do that. But you're not making a TV show. Stop it. And Amazon, you could stop that shit as well.
Yeah.
The actual voice actors' names. If I put Ash Lynx into a fucking, you know, IMDb, it's probably going to come up with, I don't even know what I'm going to end up with. Fucking Naked Nature documentary or some shit?
A
like Steve
actor.
Irwin, the Crocodile Hunter?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Honestly.
Eiji Okumura. I blank IMDb.
Probably putting links in.
Once pole vaulted. I think a lot of times on Amazon, like, I don't actually know if you can do it with Banana Fish, but I should, like, try to test it on some of my devices. But during the show, if you turn on a setting or, like, move the mouse or press a button on your controller, if you're watching at home or whatever, a lot of times they will surface data about the actors and even voice actors. They certainly did with Cabaneri of the Iron Fortress when I was watching on there. That was like the first big get a couple years ago for Amazon, that show. But I don't know if they are doing it for Banana Fish, and I wish they would surface the actors. Boy, it was... It was quite something. Because I just noticed that for the first time today. Really? That's mildly annoying. All right, but let's talk about the episode. The scene that Mira mentioned, I think... Oh, boy. So, I have an unpopular opinion about that scene that I didn't think it was that good. I'm sorry.
Your audio literally cuts out when you said that, as if you censored yourself.
Oh, no. Did I,
I can still hear you, but just for a brief second. Like, I literally could have, if I was doing this a podcast, I could have literally put in censor beeps over it. I have an unpopular opinion on this episode. I didn't think that particular scene was beep.
Well.
Or I could put in, like, noises of, like, you know, air horns or some shit like that.
That should be, so I should get the air horn for the soundboard. But don't. Oh, well, you know what? Let me give myself, speaking of the soundboard, let me give myself the booze. Because I know it's a, like, conceptually, I think that scene is awesome. It just didn't feel like they quite, like, I don't know, it didn't. Something about it didn't click for me or feel earned exactly.
Well,
not on
I
the
have
part
a...
of Ash, but like on the part of Max. It just It just
I have
didn't,
a thought on it.
It yeah, I mean, I wish like if Eiji had done it, You know, it just, the build to it wasn't what it should have been.
I agree, but I think that's not the fault of the material so much as it is possibly the adaptation.
Yeah.
To answer your thoughts on that, Doc, let me throw something out there.
But you do, I just want to say, like, again, I mean, a compliment sandwich this, and I'll just reiterate what I said before. Conceptually, I love it. I love, like, the act of it, you know, from Max as a father figure to Ash. Do you think it is sort of... I don't know. Why don't you say your bit, and then I'll come back.
Well, here's the thing, right? We've had a long-standing, like, almost played as a joke kind of thing about Max pretending to be Ash's father. Like, they used it initially to, you know, have him buy the condo, and then they've had running mm-hmm. gags of it since then. Indeed, we had the stuff in the prison where, you know, I said that Max was, you know, doing the various things and goading Ash as he was to allow him to vent, to essentially be, like, you know, a punching bag for him.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, right? Yes, that was played as a joke for a while, or as, you know, the necessary thing to do certain things in the show, such as get the condo. But here's where I think it graduates into being something more serious and genuine, and I'll tell you why. It's not just about that scene, but consider the wider context. Who is also pretending to be Ash's father?
Oh.
There's your contrast. Ash has, technically, I would argue, had three fathers. Now I'm putting big air quotes on.
Okay.
His biological dad, who gave him the very sound advice of, hey, son, if you're going to get fucked in the ass, at least get paid for it. Dick.
God, when you just say that. That fucker.
Yeah. Oh, he fucking chokes on a meatball.
Jesus.
Dickhead.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, that's how great Ash's genuine biological father is, although, I mean, I don't put biology. I always keep hearing that phrase, like, the people say to me, oh, well, blood runs thicker than water. I'm like, fuck does that even mean?
Man.
Like, unless you're a vampire, you can't drink blood, so shut the fuck up.
Blood runs thicker than water. But I would know, of course, having tried both.
I prefer type O negative. It's great.
Don't anyway. Say that. This is Doc's blood type. Oh
shit. Right. So I think that for me, like, this is the point where the surrogate father element, Max, actually becomes more genuinely serious. Because Ash at that point could have taken or left the pictures, but I think he would have made a genuine mistake not to have burnt them.
Hmm.
Or to have destroyed them in some method. And Max, I think, recognizes that and makes the step for that. So I think this is I thought it was quite poignant, and I thought it was a graduation, especially given the wider context of how Golzine is trying to become Ash's legal father, even though he's never done anything decent in his life. I mean, okay, in a vacuum, Golzine has bought, like, Ash many, many things. You know, the car, clothes, etc. He's taught him, he's educated him. Is also fucking rapes. So again, this is like, you know, material things on their own don't have a lot of intrinsic value anyway, in my opinion. Right? Like, well, they can do, but mm-hmm. certainly not in the context of Golzine here. So as Mira has said there, this is the point where for me, like, it becomes really crystal that this is a genuine surrogate fatherhood.
Yeah.
More of a father than, you know, either of the two fathers he's had in his life. So I really appreciate it as a quiet, quick moment just to deal with that. Part of me thinks
I like
that maybe
it, you know what? Yeah, I mean, I like it for that reason. Go ahead.
Part of me thinks that possibly there might have been more time devoted to the lead up to this in the manga, maybe, because again, I really do get the impression this episode is like, it's like I said to you off cast. It's like I'm genuinely surprised I didn't hear the VCR tracking noise because it was going at 2x speed.
Man, Max feels like he's Max really feels like he's got the shaft in this adaptation. To me, maybe things would change if I viewed the episodes like marathon style or in chunks. But I'm watching it one by one. Like, I really wanted this. I wanted to feel really strongly about this. It just didn't land for me like I thought it would have.
Here's the problem, and it's not really a fault of the show but or the material. Max, for like the last half of the show, even I'd argue, has not really had much to do beyond the journalism subplot,
no,
which has been just kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, the emotional connections that you get between Max and Ash would inevitably be conflicting screen time wise with the emotional connections between him and AJ. It really, if you wanted to have this done properly, quote unquote, you've ideally want to cut one or two entirely from the show altogether and just have it laser focused on being it, you know, Ash meeting AJ and finding, you know, genuine affection through another person who is just that pure hive. Or you would have the other storyline, which is Ash meeting Max and finding a genuine father figure who actually does care for him while they try and unravel his mystery. Now, I don't want to lose either of them. That's the problem. You've got like Sophie's Choice going on here because I like both elements, but I think that if you wanted to get more out of the Max Ash thing, then more screen time needs to be devoted to them, and then we can start talking about what you cut from adaptation, blah 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 blah. And I think they made the right choice ultimately, of course, making it mainly about Ash and AJ, because of course it's going to be about them. That's the main thrust of the story. But I do hear you that I think that more time would have been nice to see between those two characters rather than having Max and fucking eBay end up in a bar randomly in one of the previous episodes, and that felt so very like cogent for Max's role in the last half of the show, where they're just randomly there, don't know what the fuck they're doing, they're just getting hammered. I'm a guy, I got nothing to do. I'm going to drink a beer until I get the next news bulletin that tells me what's going to happen next. Like he's receiving a fucking mission briefing through Codec. Honestly.
That scene was so... I love that club scene so much. Okay. Next point that I have...
I think it's...
What's that?
Go on.
Oh, go on. It's related.
Next point.
So, like, yeah. What do you think about what Max was saying to Ash during that scene? Like, I mean, I appreciate the gesture of burning the pictures, right? And I appreciate the idea of like trying to be freed from the past. But like, and I know not everybody is gonna, I don't know, I guess heal the same way, or not everyone can be a therapist. So Max is doing the best he can. I don't know. It just seems a bit like cheap, I guess. Just be like, just forget about it if you can. Don't let it. Don't be bound by it anymore. I'm like, well, that's fucking great. I mean, thanks. There's some actionable advice or whatever. I don't know. Like, I guess, and it's been a long time since it happened, so maybe it doesn't strike Ash that way. Maybe it doesn't come off as very annoying. Well, but I mean, he's got...
Then again, where he was standing, the fact he would look at the pictures. He wouldn't admit it. He wouldn't say outright. But he clearly still had... sting to it, knowing that they exist.
Oh yeah, I mean, he almost killed a guy. But he, I mean, to ultimately figure this shit out and like find peace, he's got to learn to integrate these experiences into his life now. And I don't know. I mean, there's so I'm mixed on it. Like, I understand. Like, I like the bit about like you. Like I said, like, you don't have to be bound by this. This doesn't have to determine the rest of your life, like what happened to you. I mean, I think that's good. But to just like burn it away and forget about it, I'm not as on board with, I guess. I don't know. I feel bad because I'm being very critical of a scene that I know folks in chat like.
I don't think your interpretation is necessarily wrong there. I think it's just going to be a question of how people feel, like, philosophically, on what steps people should take to try and help others. You know, to be passive, quote-unquote, where you're receptive. Like, talk about it when you're ready, but I'm not going to push you to anything. Versus those who feel more affirmative in how they approach things.
Yeah.
For me, I firstly think it's very consistent for Max's character to do that, because he's constantly, like, particularly in the prison, he has pushed and egged Ash on to do stuff.
Do like him doing it. I mean, I like that act of burning the pictures, and I like him taking an active role in Ash's betterment. So, I mean, there are things I really like about the scene.
And for me, I think the gesture itself certainly was quite profound. The words, I do kind of get what you mean, like, you know, it's not something you just simply say, you know, well, forget about it. But then again, Max's tone of voice and his delivery, praise to his voice accent, is very somber. He's not passing... it's all right, Skip, you'll get over it, like he's just fucking racist.
Out of sight, out of mind, lad.
God. Yeah, he's not doing that. I think that in the end, Max, and as far as Ash, like, Ash and AG, right, apart from the obvious, you know, fact that they really should just be flat out face at this point, that should be textual. But the thing is, like, AG is the receptive kind of healer. I mean, mm-hmm. We remember that scene where Ash was leaning on his knee? He's mm-hmm. not really someone to push Ash to do anything, except certain physical activities like Gavin, like when he got in the shower, you know, like that one time after he came back from doing the prostitutes.
Yeah.
But actually pushing him to do certain acts, I don't think is in AG's nature. Max is the other side of that coin where he will push him to do things or will take action on his behalf. So,
it's like idealized wife versus idealized dad.
Ideal dad, yeah. So, for me personally, I really likes it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to pretend that, you know, that it's the objectively right way to handle things. I think in this particular circumstance, given how Ash clearly physically felt and looks, I think that Max made the right choice to do that on his behalf, because Ash clearly, you know, well, there's also the very pragmatic and cold approach of, well, yeah, by the way, there's a fucking mercenary army after us. Let's get our heads in the game. You can't be distracted by this stuff. There is that very cold approach he wants. All in all, I'm okay with it, but I wouldn't pretend it's for everyone, be it for everyone to do it. I mean, Max is the kind of person who can do it, but I don't say everyone can push other people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or to be done by particular people. It's a very case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't advocate it for some others in other scenarios. But I'm also admittedly only speaking from someone who's never been through that on either side.
Yeah. No, so I'm speaking purely right.
I'm speaking purely academically here.
Yeah.
But it made for good drama. And I mean, that's much I can say.
When you are, you know, essentially like a soldier in some senses, like ashes, and you're in like fight or flight survival mode, you know, I guess as a temporary sort of therapy, maybe it is a good thing to just be like, look, man, for now, just fucking forget about it. Later on, we can deal with this shit, maybe. Because I am, you know, not... You have to work your way up in therapy sometimes to these ideal solutions. Well, like, you're going to... things are Rubik's cubes, are brain puzzles.
You know what's funny? It's been a while since I've seen it, but let's talk about Evangelion for a second. Because is that not also a show about dealing with trauma and depression and such during quite significant world-altering events? Am I off base on that?
Say again? Sorry.
Well, let's talk... Okay. Let's bring up Evangelion for a second.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going there.
Let's do it.
Because is that show not also about, like, you know, dealing with trauma and depression
mm-hmm.
at the same time as catastrophic world-altering events?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you can make your comparison here. Now, it's been a while since I've seen it.
Ava's like offers a much more comprehensive and thoroughgoing psychological solution than I think.
What, to become a 2D character on a post-it? No, sorry, that's
yeah. To
yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, well, the self-acceptance. I mean, I think that's what I'd like to see. The end of the TV show anyway of Ava, the end of the alternate sort of, well, and then you have people saying that it's not an alternate ending, that they both take place in the same chronology, but I view the end of Evangelion movie as a different take on the last couple episodes, as a new ending. So in that ending, it's a lot more destructive. But like the solution at the end of the TV show is all about integration and self-acceptance, which is what I would love to see more of in this show. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe I'm being too hard on it.
Well, wasn't Evangelion's argument, or one of its core points, that even if there are literally world-ending things happening around you, you still should be taking the time to deal with your trauma?
I can't remember if that's actually a...
Put a pin in that for another time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the impression I got, and I could admittedly be completely talking out of my ass, as I usually do. But maybe that's the point that Banana Fish is trying to make here, you know, that all the stupid shit that's going on with fucking Blanca and Colonel Fox and fucking Cobra Commander and whoever else fucking turns up to this, you know, clusterfuck of a supervillain party that Golzine's got going here, all of that that's going on doesn't mean that, you know, his time to deal and comprehend with what's happened to him should be put on hold. Not that it should, you know, be happening at the most inappropriate times ever, like, or maybe it could do. Maybe there could be a story to be had in that, you know, Ash, you know, trying to fight off someone in a gunfight suddenly has traumatic flash. I don't fucking know. But I'm thinking the argument maybe here is perhaps that, you know, shouldn't necessarily be put on hold. After all, I've said before that I think that one of the show's points is that we want to see Ash come out of the end of this particular story as a whole person. Or as whole as a person as he can be. A normal person, not a boring square, but I'm talking like a person who lives in the world of normality, you know?
Yeah.
So...
I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think that this scene helps in that regard tremendously. Because Ash is of the mind that all he's good for is killing people and being used as a sex toy by people. And that's all he's been, so therefore that's all he could ever be. I mean, he said this much to Dino, he said it to Eiji in different contexts. But, I mean, when you frame it like that, like, that is actually quite good that someone, you know, Max or whoever, like, has this symbolic gesture of burning those photos that represent that past of who he was and saying, this does not determine your future. This isn't who you are fundamentally, and it doesn't dictate what you do going forward. So don't live your life like that. You know, don't throw your life away in the last battle because, you know, you don't think you're worthy. You don't think that your life amounts to anything, or that you're a good person, or that you living is worthwhile. So I actually do, in view of what you just said, I think the dialogue, part of the dialogue, makes a lot of sense. And I think Manera has diagnosed my feelings on it pretty well, that I really am thinking a lot about the buildup and how I wish it could have been better.
And the
scene has left me a little cold for that reason, but now I'm coming around conceptually on how it kind of fits with everything else and liking it very much.
One quick thing I'll add, by the way. We never actually see the photos. Now, here's the thing. I'm not saying that when we would see them, we would see what was on them, but we don't actually see the Polaroids themselves. Or the USB flash drive, whatever the fuck. It's not. But Max doesn't take them out and burn them. He just burns them in the envelope because he can't see them. And I think that's also quite important to remark on how he views Ash. The Ash in front of him is not the Ash in those pictures. He doesn't want to know what's in there. Not just because it would be, you know, appalling to look at, of course, but because also he believes Ash isn't defined that way. So I think that could be quite important as well.
Yeah.
He's like, no, they can stay in there, they can burn to Ash, and whatever was on them can be ignored. I don't care.
That right there, I think, is so key. Like, I'm not going to look at them because, frankly, it doesn't matter what's on them. It could be something far worse than you've told me, worse. You know, it could be something that is more heinous or hurts you even more deeply, or that no one's talked about. Like, it doesn't matter. Whatever's on there, it does not matter. Like, it from going forward, it does not determine your future. And it doesn't have to shape who you are. I mean, it's going to shape who you are, I guess, but, like, it doesn't have to determine what you make of the rest of your life, and it's not the ultimate final judgment on the worth of your life.
Yep. There we go. All right.
Note to self, buy vodka for episode. 22.
Like,
amazing.
I really get the impression shit's going to hit the fan super hard.
Boy.
And I don't know. Woo.
All right, I got another question.
Next point.
Are you happy with where the Yutlun character is at the moment? Do you think he comes... Like, so someone in the chat said, quite rightly, I think, boy, it would be nice if Yutlun had a rival. Someone to test, really test his wits against. But he's been cornered. He's been put in this impossible scenario. Golzine has muscled him out of acting on anything to do with Ash. Colonel is doing everything. He'll never get the better of Ash because Ash is going to win in every exchange. He didn't really get to rise up and be the main antagonist that I thought he would be. It would be nice to see him like in a sort of mental battle of chess with an equal, maybe come out on top a time or two. I don't know. I feel like he's just sort of now squabbling with Blanca, and maybe he'll get his final moment in the sun in the last few episodes.
Oh, sorry.
Bathing in the light of Ash.
Well, to answer your question, I think that, like the Ash problem in general, I think that the way Yutlun is presenting the show, it's not only fault of his own character, it's relative to other characters. Funnily enough, is very appropriate for the moon as it happens. But, I mean, I was going to bring this up as a separate topic, but I'll bring it up now. Who the flying fuck is Colonel Fox, and why the fuck should I care about him? Legitimate question. I already was annoyed enough at the fact that we fucking parachuted Blanca in as a, oh shit, I've made Ash too good, and I've obviously got to undo this. How the fuck do I undo it? Oh, right, I make it so his mentor's the one who's going to take him down. But then that's kind of gone out the window, sort of. Kinda. So now Golzine's just literally got in this fucking, you know, proof of life motherfucker coming in. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, he's a fucking... It's not good writing, I'm sorry to say, to parachute in a character like that. Twice over in the last fucking quarter of the show to head off the character that I'm probably... And the thing is, it's not even a... This is the thing, right, that differentiating Blanca. Blanca was a direct response to Ash being too good. I don't know what the fuck Fox is a response to, because Blanca's already there. So, why is he here? Because we need to have action scenes? Like, can we not have Blanca doing shit? And this is why it ties back to Lee Young, because if fucking Fox wasn't in this, what could they have done with the spare time? Devote it to Lee Young doing stuff.
I want to see more. I want to, you know, I mean, he got to be evil in this episode, but I don't know.
I also get the impression that maybe that's a function as well of not of the compression. Like, it would have probably had more impact what Lee Young was doing with things like teammates, for example. If that wasn't happening is you know, spread out over a longer period of time, like it would be if you were reading the manga as it was being released.
Mm-hmm.
Or the manga in general, because obviously it's a lot more pages. So
he just kind of getting is it, maybe just I don't know maybe the I can't decide if the book wants him to be redeemed or not because you have his sort of Jiminy Cricket filtered through form of serial killer Blanca, you know. Wow, why are you doing this? Blood is the thing that hurt you, and now you're hurting them. Who are you to talk? But like, you know, whatever. Man, I want him to be more of a deeply integrated part of what's going on. And this
Jason Fox, Jason Blanca, give more time to the young. He is easily the most interesting villain of the show. Golzine isn't a patch, in my opinion. Blanca is fucking Blanca Slate, as I've said before.
He's okay.
Colonel, no fucks given. Don't care. Token villain. This is literally 3 episodes before the end. He has no personal connection to Ash. As people have said in the chat, he's a fucking waste of my time.
He is a, yeah, like...
You could replace him with a fucking meteorite. or another natural disaster. You could replace him with a herd of rampaging elephants or a fucking swarm of locusts. It doesn't matter what you replace Fox with, as long as it serves to be an impediment. He could literally... Oh.
Man.
Whatever. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem like the creator was like, man.
Oh, shit, I wrote myself into the corner. Let me write myself out.
Well, not even that. Because, like, I feel like it just creating more obstacles. But, like, you know, they're like, boy, I just love action movies so much. Let me get another archetypical action movie villain in here. Like, supposedly deceased, you know, French mercenary. Like, I mean, seriously, the last episode, if, you know, if an arms dealer emerges as the main villain, like, it's just... It's going to be bad. There's so many archetypes happening, but for no reason, because like you said, we have a lot of capable characters. Any more talking points for you?
No, I'm good. That's all I need to say about it. I suppose, by the way, I'll mention very quickly, I'm guessing the title of The Undefeated refers to Fox.
I would think so.
And all I'll say to that is, what? Being a fucking boring, lame-ass piece of shit character introduced at the last second as a desperate ploy to keep the action in the show going when there's otherwise plenty of other interesting things we'd be doing with either characters or action or both.
God, Blanca really was supposed to be this. I mean, what? But he did it already and he won. So I guess, I don't know, maybe they're like, Ash needs to look cool and, like, beat someone. But he fucking did that already when he... I don't know. Okay. I'm sounding a lot more frustrated than I actually am with this episode.
Yeah.
Just thinking about big picture things that could have been more neatly done. Do you want to hear some... an email that we got?
Go on, hit me.
Okay, this is from Case. Who... You know, we've gotten more... discourse about our Banana Fish episode 19 discussion than anything else in the history of our show, it seems like. And in terms of just words written, you know, this is another extremely... I'm extremely grateful for this. Don't get me wrong. Like,
to answer your question very quickly, I mean, I think I was just tilting my head and not blinking.
Like, I'm beyond flattered that people would... That, and every week we get people in chat that gives...
Was 19 the one where we... Oh, God, yeah, 19, man.
So 19 is specifically the scene, again, where Yut Lung, there's an attempt on his life. The chef tries to kill him, you know, and mm-hmm. he gets a wound in the arm and the guy kills himself, that whole thing. And we read an email from Jessica last week or the week before. I think it was last week. Talked about that this was an inside job set up by Yut Lung to lure in Blanca.
Pay attention to me, senpai.
Yes. But Case says, actually, that they thought the interpretation of the planned assassination was an interesting one and valid, but it's not one that they lean towards. It's not intuitive that they got from the manga or the anime. And the main reason is they think it makes more sense for Yut Lung's character for it to have been unintentional. So it's like we have like the regular on the face interpretation where we're both like, man, this felt rushed and annoying. And then it's like, actually, consider it from the point of view of Yut Lung's character and what makes sense for him, says Jessica. But Case is like, no, it makes even more sense for Yut Lung's character for it to have been unintentional. So,
well, Emily, just to point something out, let's bring up Franks again, because it happened in that and it happened in this too. The reason these characters were not foreshadowed, at least in the manga, as far as I speculate, is because they didn't conceptually exist at the time that, you know, the work was started. Like, here's the thing, right? Banana Fish Episode 1, first volume. Ash, yep, he was definitely a character in the writer's head, or at least on paper. AJ, Golzine, Max... Otter, Luke Young, definitely. Blanca, no. Blanca did not exist at that point, conceptually. And Fox certainly doesn't fucking exist. He doesn't exist now. I swear blind, if I squint any harder when I see him on screen, he'll be turned fucking transparent. He is a fucking ghost. He's not even substantial in any way, shape, or form. He is a whiff of fucking secondhand air. Fuck that guy.
Okay, there. Fix the picture. I just am seeing people's notes in the chat about the stream picture being fucked up. And it was a Google Doc that I had open fucking things up. So sorry about that.
You got to see my wonderful pouty, man, pudgy face.
One side of my head right there in the camera. It's like, no. Sorry I didn't see that sooner, everybody. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the reason that these characters were not foreshadowed, because they didn't exist in the writer's head or on paper at the time. You know, that they otherwise would have been foreshadowed. Blanca didn't exist until he was written into the show. That's my
opinion. Okay.
So right. In much the same way that Sarah Kerrigan didn't in Franks.
Sarah Kerrigan. Must we talk about that show?
A valid comparison point. You kind of concede that. It's true.
I'll try my best to summarize Case's case, as it were. For Yut Lung not plotting his own assassination. Throughout the series, we see Yut Lung constantly plotting. He's very manipulative. His craftiness ensures his plots succeed. Kidnapping AG, getting his hands on Banana Fish, drugging one of his brothers and killing the rest. It also eliminates his chances of forming any genuine emotional connections, which we see how much he resents. He was raised in a hostile environment, but he continues a pattern of hostility that prevents any improvements due to that upbringing. However, in the scene where Blanca agrees to form a contract with him, Yut Lung looks surprised. And this isn't just...
Form a contract? Is Blanca a fucking heroic spirit? We said this before.
That's right.
We said this before.
He is. He should be. So, he's assassin, of course.
Of course, yeah. Oh, he's shit then, because the assassins are always shit.
Yeah, they're very bad. Let's see. He's not only surprised because his plan to hire Blanca succeeded. In the scene before, he didn't even seem a bit thrown off when Blanca agreed to visit after blackmailing him in the hotel. If you look, his facial expression indicated a very just as planned kind of reaction, and it worked to a degree. But there was no feeling involved. Yet in the latter scene, Blanca agrees to form a contract, saying he has too many enemies for his age, he being Yut Lung. This indicates concern, and Yut Lung has never had another human care about his well-being at all. This is what catches him off guard. Yut Lung is shocked to think that another individual might care about him at least a little. So if we take this into account and assume Yut Lung did not intentionally have the assassination target him, it becomes ironic that Yut Lung finds a smidgen of human connection in something that he didn't plan, you know, because these things that he does plan cut off that human connection when they succeed. His plotting has got him nowhere in terms of forming healthy relationships, so this continues the pattern of manipulation equals success in the mafia underworld, but zero for healthy self-actualization, while vulnerability equals destruction in the underworld, but possible chance for human warmth and connection. In a sense, his accidental vulnerability there may have gotten him a glimmer of the latter, but unfortunately, I don't think he's self-aware enough to realize it. If he does have some self-awareness, it's compromised by him actively pushing that vulnerability away. This push and pull of him is partly why I think he's kind of fascinating.
Going like the tides of the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Like in episode 20, I think his anger has less to do with not catching Ash and more to do with his thoughts on how Blanca and Singh have betrayed him, quote-unquote. Singh has crossed over to helping Ash, and Blanca is still supporting Ash emotionally. No matter what, he cannot win against Ash in this sense. Of course, this is largely his own fault, but those two were not completely toxic people around him, and it fuels his own desperation and jealousy. Very interesting. I said I was going to summarize it, and I just read it because I just enjoyed the...
Yeah, no, thank you very much, that case. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you.
I think it really does...
Boy.
I think it really does kind of come, like, clear to me that the idea, like, the reason that Yut Lung is the most interesting villain is also because he does zig everywhere Ash zags. I mean, I've mentioned this before, but I think it's very true.
Yeah.
That even in, like, his case loose there, if that was the intent that, you know, he had that moment of genuine connection with Blanco. And Blanco's like, I'm worried about you. And he's like, what? He just blue screens inside his head.
Right, right.
Because he can't comprehend it, or he can comprehend it and he's repulsed by it. Whereas Ash seems more content to try and embrace these moments where he will allow himself to be, you know, vulnerable and allow genuine emotional connection. It's something he actually wants.
Yeah. He didn't.
I mean, two sides of the same coin, dark mirrors, sun, moon, you know, the themes all fun.
Yulung
comes together.
He either did not want to see inside his own heart in this episode, or he didn't want to be reminded of what he'd already seen. You know, when Blanca points out that he's doing to others what was visited upon him, and he's just like, shut up! Shut up! Like, yeah. I mean, this makes sense. I can't decide now where I fall on it. I think
they're both valid.
If this was,
I think that's the easiest way to go with it. whatever you're comfortable with, because they're both good interpretations that make the show more interesting as a result. It's a win-win.
I agree. This is an advantage of like, I know some people don't enjoy kind of storytelling as if it's an underdetermined hypothesis, but I actually do enjoy, like, when things are laid out as such that you can put your own multiple interpretations can be formed that are coherent and enhance the story. Enjoy that.
It's a question of what is the, like, it's really hard to explain, but like, there are some stories that do lend themselves well to that kind of ambiguity of interpretation. There are some where you're just like, I cannot believe they didn't give us a fucking clear cut answer on this. And I think that's really on a work by work basis, depending on how you feel about it. But I am in agreement that I don't think that, you know, everything should be set in stone. I think that, you know, subtext and subtlety can greatly enrich a work. And if we can have it both ways in this way, you can feel either way about Luke Young's like moment from episode 19 and still come out understanding his character better. That is good writing. That is, in my opinion. Not Foxo. Fuck that guy. Fuck you, Fox.
Yeah, that's... I'm glad we can all agree that this character just does not belong here. It's bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
You want to rate the episode?
Yes, I do. All right. So, for me, I banged on enough about Fox being a fucking waste of oxygen that he, you know, could be replaced by a fucking tsunami and it would have no effects really on the story. Stuff with Yulung was good. The stuff with Ash and Age is always good. There's some really good moments of direction in this episode. The moment between him and Max was good. The comedy was good as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we had some great humorous moments that were also, I should stress, never derisive. I mean, when you go into, like, you know, when you've got the gay bar scene there, it would have been all too easy for a lesser writer to have just been like, oh no, the strange, unusual queer folk like Persona 5.
Do you not think Max kind of did that?
Well, we're not meant to, the thing is though, we're not meant to, you know, agree with Max necessarily.
Yeah.
Max being freaked out, when Max is freaked out by that, the comedy is at his expense.
And then, and Ash is right there to just be like, you know, welcome to the world of, you know, for the rest of us, you know, like, this is what people go through.
I mean,
that so is true. That is true. And he does, and it's not like, I think it really, like, they crank it up, but it's because he got groped, you know, and, like, that's just not fun when you don't want that to happen in general. So I can understand being like, no, got groped. I did not want that. That's not an... I don't think that's like him being anti-gay as much as being anti-grope. despite his initial hesitation to go in.
It's done tastefully, but it's still amusing. I also really enjoyed the return, of course, of the, you know, X of the Y naming conventions or fucking Harlem Chicken. Thank you very much for that. That's great. I love it.
Harlem Chicken!
I wasn't a huge fan of the action in this episode for the reason I've not been a fan of it for a while now, because I don't feel tense watching it. I mean, I know I really should at this point, because, like, you've got Kane and Singh and they're getting, you know, shot by his fucking mercs, but I don't know who the mercs are. I don't care about them. I don't give a shit. And then the pacing on this episode was also quite fast. A bit too much, in my opinion. It really moved way too quickly. But it's one of those damn you do, damn you don't things when you're adapting a voluminous work like this into a show. And, well. So, for me, in the end, I will give this episode 3 out of 5, you know, they really should do it anyway, love charms from my sister, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Still reckon that's taking a bullet. Yeah. Still reckon that's taking a bullet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, for all the same reasons you said, once again, I feel like as a... I think the show, you could probably say, is a testament to, like, the fact that, like, if creators invest early on in their characters and character development, it will pay off big time, even if the kind of plot writing or other things fall away and are less interesting. Like, the show still has these characters, therefore I care. Yeah.
This is why for me, even though Ash is OP, as I've said before, I still want him to succeed. I still care. I might not, you know, feel that he's ever really under any threat when he gets involved in a firefight. I might not be too fussed about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still absolutely want him to succeed.
Yeah.
I want him to succeed so fucking hard. I want him to, you know, fucking take Golzine's fucking head and slam it inside a car door until there's nothing but chunky salsa.
Oh.
That's what I want. That's what I want. And I still want that because I am, as you rightly said, invested from the get-go with the characters. I think that Banana Fish is probably going to end up being a textbook case of one of those things where great start doesn't quite stick the landing, like a certain show that you and I will be talking about this week.
Don't spoil it for me. I want it to stick the landing so fucking...
That's just me, though.
But no, Virgalia, too. Virgalia finished it, and she... I mean, she didn't say as much. Like, she wasn't like, good show, didn't stick the landing. She, like, is in love with the show. But reflecting on the ending... Macross Delta, by the way, is what we're talking about. We're going to record a podcast for that next week.
This week, isn't it?
Oh, keep getting mixed up. Yes, Wednesday. That's right. It's a very Macross Christmas. This Wednesday. But no, he's like, yeah, you know, what did she say? That she was a little sad and disappointed at some choices made at the end. So we'll see. I'm still in the part where I'm like, yeah, baby, this is the fucking good shit. I'm on episode 15.
You're gonna hate me when I start reeling off the things I have issues with, even though I still really like the show.
It's okay. There's even, I think, well, up to this point, I even think that they actually get something a bit more right than Frontier, which is crazy.
Yes, but, and no.
It's a particular plot element. It's not to do with anything particularly major. But anyway, we're going on.
Yeah.
We need to put our cards close to our chest with the Delta.
Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to talk about Delta because I get to talk about things like domestic terrorism, nuclear weapons, self-loathing and identity issue, politics.
Yeah. In anime.
I get to talk about all of my favorite things in anime. Oh, globalization. I get to throw that one in as well. That's going to be a fucking fun...
That's superb. I'm ready to hear it.
And of course, I also get to talk about the
catfish?
Cat puns.
Yes. Oh, that's my favorite episode so far.
I mean, apologies for, you know.
Listen.
God, Frey is so good.
I'm not a Twitter savant, but just posting that cat pun got me a tweet with like 400 likes. So there you go. If you want...
Smash that like button.
If you want to be good at Twitter, just post pictures of cat puns. That's what I've learned the last, I don't know, 5 years or whatever. Okay, rating the episode, though. Yeah, like I said, the character writing, very strong. You know, authors' tendency to keep introducing characters, notwithstanding. I think that I'm going to give the episode a
pat on the back.
3.5 Harlem chickens out of 5.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Is that the combo deal? You get free, you know, get 3.5 on those side fries.
This episode brought to you by Harlem Chicken.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing jerky about our chicken. too easy.
Spicy takes.
I could go right now, actually.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway.
We have no polls because I didn't do any polls because there was not at any point in this episode where I was not either engaged with you or summarizing.
Could we end up... I mean, the only poll I could think of would be, like, is, you know, Colonel Fox a fucking useless, you know, vestigial character?
Yes, well, I don't want to, you know... We're going to do that one. We're going to do...
No,
they will be on the Twitter machine after the episode is over. I will do some polls. We need to work on our division of labor, and when I'm doing the summary, then perhaps Shadon could handle creating the polls in future. Maybe that would work because that's what I've mostly been doing. It it's hard to when we're discussing. I'm not a very good multitasker.
To answer your question, Jessica, we do, but then we also have Harlem fries, chicken shake and fries. There you go.
Yeah, Harlem and you know, if you order now, you get a complimentary Harlem floss. You know, if we're bringing in the Harlem shake. We got to have bring in the floss. That's this year's Harlem shake.
Yeah, there is no regular size. There is no regular size because you always go large in Harlem.
Dude. Oh, man. There's such a... I mean, anime being racist, like, whatever, old news. I can't remember if it's one of the OAVs or the TV series, but in an old mecha show from the 80s called Dan Cougar... Not like, it's all one word, not like last name Cougar, first name Daniel, just Dan Cougar. There is a scene where they go, the crew goes to Harlem, and it is unbelievably racist. Oh boy, but anyway.
Apart from that. Well, stay tuned to season 4. But I'll do that, fuck that.
Ye old mecca. Okay. I think that's it. I think that we're done, but before we head out and sign off, want to remind everyone, we already mentioned the Very Macross Christmas, but on December the 12th, not the 5th, like I mistakenly posted before, next Wednesday, December the 12th, we are doing a live stream in addition to the Banana Fish stream. We're going to watch a terrible anime selected by you in honor of our 300 subs, because it's what we think about you. No, it's because people seem to enjoy us torturing ourselves, so we're going to subject ourselves to torture as thank you for 300 people subscribing to our absolute nonsense, people and or bots. That number passed 300, so we're doing a nice thing. We haven't really got anyone sending in their bad anime suggestions. It seems like our chat is of such good and refined taste that they have not seen bad anime to recommend to us in the OAV format. I should say, some people have said you should watch this TV show or that TV show, but we want to keep it to a shortish stream, so we're going to do an OAV or movie. But a chat commenter, I wish I could remember who it was. I feel bad because I'm not going to be able to credit them. I'll have to go back. Maybe I'll try to go back in the chat logs. Mars of Destruction was suggested. So that's looking like it could be on the list. It's only 20 minutes long, so we'll have to pair it with something else. But yeah, make your case. Tweet us at WaruiDesho or email WaruiDesho.
Bring it on.
At gmail.com. Make your case for the terrible anime of your choice and why we should watch it.
Live and comment on it. you'll get a chance to make us suffer. You get to give us the particular blend of terrible that could drive us wild. I go fucking nuts when I watch stupid shit. If you want to see me flip the fuck out and lose my shit.
Oh, man.
And then now's your time to throw in your recommendation. Go. If you want to see me go somehow into negative hair count, get you like, you know, bald has no hair, I go negative.
Yeah.
Then this is your time. Get it in. Get your suggestions in. OVA, not hentai, not something we've seen before, if at all possible.
Thank you, Mira.
Bring it on, and we'll watch it. Mars of Destruction, currently a strong contender because I've heard shockingly bad things about mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, same. You guys should, if you want to, you should listen to us watch Garzy's Wing and talk about it. Misha, Don, and Borgalia. There is... I'll post this in the chat now. I'll find it. We've done a few of these, but not on YouTube. This, you know, we give you... We say, like, you know, hey, we're going to start the movie now, so press play. That kind of thing. And you can hear the audio, in fact, in on our track. So it's just like a sort of podcast, MST3K sort of thing that we've done. But we're looking to move this onto YouTube, and there will be, you know, a visual sort of element. People will see Shadon's lovely face get angry, and it will be great. Oh, goodbye, Ash. Goodbye.
Bye, Ash.
Yeah, nothing phases Mirror anymore. Mirror's seen too many bad anime. I hear you.
Mirror's there like Rutger Hauer's character in Blade Runner just on the rooftop. I've seen things.
Yeah, exactly.
You people wouldn't believe.
100%.
Little sister is glycerin.
Well, nice. come hang out with us on the 12th fresh and
tears. And on that note, I'm sorry.
Come hang out with us and Totoro on the 12th.
Indeed.
And, enjoy bad anime with us all.
Indeed.
Shadon,
all right.
Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to hang out?
You can find me at the account of you can find me at Shaden1010. I have Curious Cat, which has not seen any action recently. Wink, wink.
Someone ask him questions. Question this man.
Ask me questions of a fresting or non-fresting nature. I'll answer them anyway. Fuck it. Who gives a shit? Yeah, you can find me there. Say hello.
So, for myself, I'm at The Subtle Doctor on Twitter. At Warui Show as well. Yeah, hit me up. Whatever you want to talk about anime-wise or non-anime-wise, I am down. Down to chat, DTC. That's me. yeah, Banana Fish episode. Thank you, Jessica. It's one of my children's. Each one of them have one of these, and the small Totoros, the white ones that follow them. Gosh, I wish I could remember what my youngest calls him. The small one. What does he call him?
Totoro?
Mr. So-and-so. I can't remember. It's Mr. Something. I'll have to ask him and report back in. So, bye, Totoro. It's a very cute Totoro. We have a Totoro pillow as well. In our house, we love the Totoro. There's also a poster of Totoro in our laundry room, because folding laundry is like the shittiest, worst thing ever. So it's nice to have like a, you know,
there's a sort
of reminder.
That ironing cover was from a friend of mine who burnt my other one, and I just kind of have it there. So I'm surprised no one's not commented before and said, "What the fuck is that? Why has he got strawberries on his fucking ironing board?"
I know.
I'm very sorry to say that it doesn't smell of strawberries when you iron.
How far am I into Danganronpa? I'm on I'm playing Danganronpa 2. I've beaten the original Danganronpa. It's so fucking good. I'm still working through the second case. Why can I not? Hajime, the main character, has playing. I just played a bit of the arcade game that Monokuma introduces to the people, and I got a little ways into it, but decided to stop because I wanted to save my game. And Hajime was like, "Oh no, what have I done?" that's where I am. Since the game has come up, I'm hoping this does not mean Chiaki is going to be the killer or be killed, because she might be my favorite character right now. Like, I didn't think I was going to care about her. It's like, oh, a gamer girl. Great. Thank you for the otaku bait. But no, like, she's fantastic. Like, she really gives a shit about what's going on, about people. She's empathetic and smart. She's like the smartest character on the goddamn island. Because it's a bunch of crazy people, a bunch of genius, crazy morons that are running around, and then you have Chiaki, and Nagito is, I guess, sort of smart. He's just a nut. He's just a crazy person. I like sweeping the floor better than folding clothes myself. It feels like, I don't know, you get more accomplished faster to me. But I understand, like, if you have a back issue or something, that could suck.
As far as it goes, Emily, I'm actually a surprisingly semi-functional, responsible adult. I'm fucking stunned at as much as you are, believe me. Unfortunately, I work in an office that requires me to wear office shirts, not this one.
That's your office.
This is
awesome.
Well, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, of course. So there you go.
Is that from the film?
No, this is not from the film. Oh, it's okay. From the TV show. Let me actually show you the proper thing. Look at that.
Oh, it's from the OG show as well. That's good.
Yeah, that's right.
The best
one. But yeah, I have to wear, unfortunately, like shirts and trousers, you know, shoes. I have to look like a formal individual, which is, you know, anathema. There's a word for you. So I do end up having to iron, unfortunately, and it is a ball.
Man, I never iron.
Thank you very much for watching Rory Deschel, ladies and gentlemen. We have been Shaden and Soul Doctor. We hope you all have a wonderful week.
That's right. And until next time, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. And
thank you.
Embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.